Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our meeting. It's 9 a.m. on September 23rd, 2025, and time to convene a regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, our Vice President, Commissioner Julieta Altramont, our Crosby, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO, General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, Chief Operating and Legal Officer, Allison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, and Morgan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or other electronic devices at this time. At this time, I am going to say the flag salute, and you may join me swiftly.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States, to the Republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible.
Copies of the agenda are located on the deputy clerk's table near the entrance. Is there any items to be added or changes to be made for the motion agenda, Commissioner?
I have.
Okay. Comments from the public is item one on the agenda today, and that's when the board will hear comments for items that are not listed on the agenda. Comments will be limited to 5 minutes, and persons shall be recognized to speak when the sign-up cards located on the deputy clerk table at the entrance. If joining by Zoom, click raise hand or dial *9 if by phone, and I will call on you to speak at the appropriate time. If you're on a phone and you're called upon, dial *6 to unmute. This meeting is being recorded. When addressing the board during the meeting, please step up to the podium, use the microphone, state and spell your name, and indicate where you are from. Please remain at the podium while you speak and address the commissioners, not the audience. If you have documents or other materials to enter in the record, please hand them to the clerk who will distribute them to the board. We appreciate your cooperation with our procedures. Please note that all motions receive an automatic silent second from the board. This ensures that all issues can be brought to the floor for discussion. So first up, item one, comments from the public. Are there any comments from the public on items not on today's agenda? Please raise your hand. No hands in the room or no hands online. We'll move to item two, our consent agenda. 2A, approval of the minutes of the regular meeting of September 9th, 2025. 2B, bid awards, professional service contracts and amendments. 2C, consideration of certification/ratification and approval of district checks and vouchers. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Are there any comments from the public regarding the consent agenda? Please raise your hand. Commissioner, do you have any questions or comments?
I have none.
I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion carried unanimously. Next, item three, our CEO General Manager briefing and study session. This item is for the board and general manager to discuss issues among ourselves and city staff. Our CEO, John Harlow, will facilitate our discussion this morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning, commissioners. We have another packed agenda with lots of good stuff. And first up is an update on our Connect Up program and Tim Epp. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Tim Epp, AMI program director. Good to be back again, commissioners.
Oh, it's good to see you again.
Thank you. So our quarterly update, give you an update on progress and happenings on the Connect Up program. So no decisions expected of the board today. This is an informational only session and of course, always ready for questions from the board. We'll go over overall status, the deployment status, talk about our last network site that continues to grind away. I'll give a short update on that initial deployment area testing. And then we'll talk about one of our Connect Up 2.0 items about weekly usage report. So overall, we are still, from a cost perspective, we are still trending good. Right now, slightly below budget. I am watching this pretty closely. I think there is a chance we could come in closer to that original budget as I'm watching some of the labor costs. But I think overall, we're doing pretty well on our budget tracking. Meter supply has been fantastic. We have actually right now, I've got 120,000 meters in inventory right now. So plenty of work for us to do. So Still expecting a total of 225,000 meters to come in this year, and then the final 90,000 or so electric meters to come in next year. Water, all of those meters are in. Top risks. Tariffs have gone quiet. I have not heard any updates. It's been a couple of months. We were expecting something, some news at the beginning of August, but nothing has come out. So I'll say no news is good news and happy about that. And the faster we can get those meters in, then that risk is mitigated. Other than that, right now, I think the rest of the risks are just related to the deployment itself. And so watching weather, and we're doing some things to mitigate for potential weather delays by shaping our plans for rolling out to avoid areas of the county where you tend to get a lot more outages during the winter months and during storms. So, milestone, I'm really happy to report we are over 100,000 electric meters installed. So that puts us north of the 25% mark. We are installing probably, I checked again this morning, I think we've been trending closer to the 2,500 per week. And that's a factor of where we're installing. We are installing east of Highway 9. So recently we invaded Darrington and Oso and sent an army of our installers out there and knocking all those areas out. So team's doing a really good job of hitting those very remote sites, and that leads to a little bit lower rate of install due to drive time and the spread. First quarter, we're expecting to shift to Southwest County. So we'll drop down to Woodway, Edmonds, Mount Lake Terrace, Briar. We're coming. Water is doing a fantastic job. They have been hitting their target of 250 per week. They're 19,000 installed. I think they actually might be closer to 20,000 now. So over that 80% mark, and still on track to complete in first quarter 2026. Opt-out rate continues to hold steady. No change in that. We'll see how. One of the things that we've been told is that the remote areas and the wealthy areas tend to be the areas where you see the higher opt-out rates. So we've been in the remote areas, and this is the rate we're getting. I think when we drop down to Woodway, Edmonds, we might see similar numbers, and then maybe we'll see things start to tail off. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that was feedback from Tacoma, their experience. Yeah. So deployment focus east of Highway 9, Lake Stevens is getting close to wrapped up. Certainly East Marysville, Arlington, Granite is almost done. Like I mentioned, Oso, Darrington, also substantially done out there.
Yeah. My neighbors are very enthusiastic about it. So
excellent.
The other, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, we were out in the sun doing yard work. And I said, well, we need more outages. We don't want to begin it soon.
That's a candidate.
You might have it.
They want their meter.
We're coming. Yeah.
Can I ask something?
Yes.
What is our goal? How many meters for total are we going to install?
In total, it's in the about 382,000 electric meters and 23,500 meters. So the reason I'm kind of waffling on that is that we're always building new homes and businesses. And so the number's growing as we're deploying. So we're chasing a little bit, but those are roughly, we'll see.
Thank you.
You know, I will say in my area, there's a social media thread, you know, someone's not happy they're getting either. And the phenomenal thing was we have gotten word out so much. People are responding with factual information and asking the question, well, why wouldn't you want to have it?
That's awesome.
So it was phenomenal. It was the office really
awesome.
Amazing. Impressive that we got the word out so well.
Yeah, kudos to CorpCom for helping us out a ton on this program and getting that word out. And of course, our customer service reps who talk to these customers day in, day out. Oh my goodness, our last site. It's like the one that you just can't. So this one's been a grind. This one is Woodway at Olympic View Water District. So we are chipping away at it. And so we had some fence moving that needed to happen. So you see a fence there. I believe another tree needs to come out of there before we can set a new pole for the antenna. But making progress, we will get there. I don't have a slide for this on the agenda, though. Initial deployment area milestone. This is an area, this is under our contract with Census, is a test to see how well our network is performing. And so there are different measures that we take. We take an area of our deployment and we measure all those things. And it's really, there's no payment milestone tied to it, but it's informing an end of program milestone, which is called system validation, in which we make sure that they have met the performance targets of the network. So the initial one is there. We're doing a review of that, and then we'll be sitting down and talking with Census about how well that's performing.
So,
generally good.
Yeah, we've been installing meters in Oso and Darrington. I imagine we've been. Is network working in those remote areas?
The network is working.
Okay.
Actually, the point of biggest pain right now is Machias, and
Okay.
it's for the water meters. So we're struggling with some of those in-ground meters, and so Census will be on the hook to mitigate that. By contract, we have a fixed price on the network. They are obligated to 100% coverage, and so that particular issue needs to be solved by them.
And sorry, okay. No, you go ahead. I'm just curious. And what happened is somebody has a dial, well, would like to change the smart meter for the meter that they have right now.
So,
I'm just curious.
yeah, to date, that is so we do not allow under our opt-out policy for people to keep or go back to an old meter. And some of the reasons for that are some of the older meters, the oldest meters, they actually slow down. And so they're inaccurate for billing. And this is known across the industry. Those are those mechanical meters that have the spinning plate inside. Those slow down. And so it's important. We've been replacing those with digital meters for at least 15 years. So for accuracy reasons, we have to put newer meters out there. But another reason for doing this and putting all these meters out there is that for keeping our costs low, it's important to narrow the list of meter types that we have. And so for customers who are concerned about privacy, we offer that option in the opt-out to turn off their broadcast communication on their meter so that they're comfortable that we're not reporting everything to their house.
No, thank you.
But
And you mentioned, Jim, that as you're doing an area, you're beginning the testing with the system and work with sense. So I'm assuming that lessons learned there, although you said it's been going well, then will apply elsewhere,
yes.
which would reduce.
Yeah, absolutely. We have actually a team or running our AMI system, and they have daily they're checking for alarms, alerts of meters not reporting in or other events going on. And so there is a cross-functional team that includes other groups such as customer accounting to make sure the billing information is getting through in our meter shop. So AMI operations, headed by Adam Peretti, kind of leads that effort to make sure that the system is performing to the level we need it to.
But I would think that from that, as you're doing it in segments, what you learn there, if there's an overriding issue,
Absolutely.
then you would apply the fix to the next section that you're doing.
Yes, absolutely. Especially if, we're looking for systemic things, especially. But there are pocket issues, like I mentioned, in the last situation.
And get rid of them, take them out. No.
Yeah. All right. ConnectUp 2.0. So this is something that a team under John Hoffman has been working on. This is something that is going to be made available through our MySnowPud website. And this is going to be a weekly report that we're going to push to customers that inform them of what their usage has been. And so this is something to help give customers an alert, like if they're trending towards a higher than normal bill, what's happening there. So both on the electric and the water side. So
they have the meters.
That have the meters, right? So this will be when this is ready, they'll be pushing this report out to customers weekly. Very excited about this. This is some of the payoff that we're hoping to get, which is informing customers about the message.
I'm having to push to my daughter.
Yeah.
Oh, we're forwarded, but
And commissioners, that's all the update I have for you. Any other questions?
Questions or comments, Commissioner?
Thank you for the update.
No, I have. Well, would you like me to come up with something? We usually have 6 or 7. Yeah, you converted me. So.
Just a comment, Commissioner Altamont Crosby. When we first approved the project, the board spent quite a bit of time talking about whether to allow people to keep their existing meters, and we decided that we wouldn't allow that. That the other big advantage is that residences, especially apartments, change ownership or tenant quickly, and this will allow us the ability, when someone has opted out, to opt the next to have back in. And then the other thing is, on Hat Island, we didn't give people an option. They can't opt out. Then we won't have to send someone out. Part of the value of all this is not having people drive all over.
They were using a special technology on that one. Power line carrier was getting older and older.
So we did have some pushback at the time. I'm frankly amazed at how few emails in, and I expected as the meters started coming, we'd get a lot more concern and stuff. So there we are.
It's never too late. Edmund's next.
Next.
So,
we're offering, if there's some issues with the meter base or existing issue, if we have run into a lot of them?
We are running into some where we do. So, Commissioner, we do also have a repair policy, a temporary repair policy that has a budget for that as well. So we are, Commissioner Olson, seeing some of those repairs are needed. Our contract electrician is staying busy. So I'm kind of anxious about, as we move into Everett in particular has me, just because of the age of the community, that we may encounter some more of that there. Although even Snohomish wasn't awful, I think Snohomish is another one of our very old communities. So things are progressing. There are no surprises in terms of the numbers that we're seeing.
Well, I really wish that in terms of the decision to do that. Had some questions. Really is over the top in terms of serving our customers.
Yeah,
we don't care.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing, Commissioner Altamont Crosby, I'd mention is, so you're armed with information when you start getting questions, is one of the things we did that other utilities didn't is we have a very low cost option. Take a picture of their meter, email it is. We had started doing that during the pandemic. It worked, and so we did an option. So most utilities, most all have an opt out, but they mostly don't have a low cost. We have.
To my knowledge, we are the only one who I've come across that offered this option.
Thank you. We're the only one.
To my knowledge, I think this was a very, very unique approach.
Again. Thank you, Tim, and kudos to you and the entire team. Fantastic work. We are going to skip the next presentation for a little bit. Jeff Kalstrom is running a little bit late. I know he had meetings this morning. So we're going to move on to the surplus of the Stanwood Community Office and Maureen Barnes. Good morning, Maureen.
Morning.
John, I see on my agenda an item A. Were there some updates that we were supposed to do before we got started with Connect Up?
That's always on there.
Okay. Sorry, Maureen.
That's fine.
No.
Thank you. Yeah.
Right. Maureen Barnes, Manager, Real Estate Services. Sorry, I know this is, maybe it's thrown everybody off.
Yeah.
I'm here today to talk about the surplus of the Stanwood Community Office. Here we go. So the purpose of the presentation is simply to inform you all of the upcoming request to declare surplus the former Stanwood Community Office, which is located at 9124 271st Street Northwest in Stanwood. I'd like to be able to answer any questions about the transaction you may have, and this action will be brought to commission for a public hearing and vote by resolution on October 6th. So let's get her started. The district purchased the Stanwood Community Office site in December of 1958 for $7,500. The property totals 1.25 acre or 55,000 square feet. It zoned Main Street business to by the city of Stanwood, which includes commercial and light industrial. The building is a single story and consists of an office and the warehouse, which is approximately 6,000 square feet, and it was built in 1962. In 2023, the pole and storage yard was relocated to the Twin City substation property in anticipation of the extension of Viking Way by the city of Stanwood. The district went through surplus and sold approximately 18,000 square feet of the parcel to the city. And we did that via resolution number 6148. And we sold that off, that and a slope easement for about $220,000. As part of the this transaction, the city will install a curb cut to allow for a secondary access at the back of the property to on and off Viking Way, which is really desirable for us. And as the North County Community Office has opened, all staff, internal fixtures, and remaining warehouse materials have been relocated. Here it is in all her beauty. When the yard was still kind of working, it's all empty now. So our next steps, property was appraised by an outside appraiser back in 2024 and appraised at $1.5 million. If declared surplus, we would go ahead and move forward in listing the property for sale with an approved real estate broker. District staff have reviewed and approved this request. And again, on October 6th, we'll be back to hold the public hearing and to vote on the resolution. We weren't able to bring this at the same time that we did the Arlington. That was because there was a lot of fiber there that had to be relocated, hence the reason we're coming now. And I'd like to answer any questions you may have.
Questions, Commissioner?
Yeah, I have a question. Only for clarification, what is the estimated revenue cost? The estimated revenue cost.
We would get in about $1.5 million.
And this is going to impact or any activities in the community?
No, not that I'm aware of. And the city of Stanwood is aware. In fact, we actually offered this to them. They had some interest, but then they decided that they didn't. So we're keeping in very close contact, and they know exactly what's happening. Thank you. They're excited about it. And I will say this, with the Arlington office, we hadn't had any inquiries. On this one, we have had a lot of people calling and asking to purchase it, which is kind of exciting.
And we wouldn't do the buyer would be responsible for demolition. And
Yeah. It's a as is, where is.
And that one point that was done in July of 2024.
Yeah, okay. It is stale dated, but really the best way to tell is, you know, what a buyer is willing to pay and what a seller is willing to accept. And it's right smack dab right there in Stanwood. So I think it's a really prime location.
It's a big parcel too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the office hasn't been open since the pandemic, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay. We're still working out of it, but yeah, it was not open. is going to stay here.
To the next one, the surplus of the 5 acres located on 268th Street, Sandwich.
Yeah. Once again, still Maureen Barnes, still the manager of Real Estate Services. And I'm going to just jump right into the surplus of 5 acres located on 268th Street Southwest in Stanwood also. So the purpose of the presentation, just to inform the board of an upcoming request to declare surplus 5 acre parcel of land located on 268th Street Southwest Stanwood. There's the parcel number. We refer to it as the Church Creek parcel, and that's just because Church Creek is right by there. So I'd like to be able to answer any questions regarding the transaction. And just like the last one, we will be coming back to commission on October 6th for a public hearing and vote by the commissioners. All right, the parcel was originally purchased in 2016 and was intended for a future substation site, basically the Twin City site. At that time, we paid approximately $1 million for the 5 acres. The property totals just over 5 acres and is zoned low density, multiple residential, which I think it allows for about, maybe 1 acre, 1.5 acre home for that. In 2018, a 16-acre parcel was available to purchase off of Pioneer Highway. This would greatly reduce the development cost compared to the Church Creek parcel, and that was bringing in the transmission. The decision was made to purchase this alternate site and construct the Twin City substation, which also now includes the pole and storage yard. We paid $1.2 million for that 16 acres. And here is the site right here. And I will say that right now, it is within the urban growth area for Snohomish County, but there is a petition that has been put in to annex right along the road there and annex that into City of Stanwood. And I know that there's a developer looking to develop around it for senior housing. So the property has not been utilized whatsoever since we acquired it. And we see absolutely no current or future need for the site. This property was valued by an outside appraiser also in July 2024 and valued at about $1.47 million. If declared surplus, we would move forward, list with the broker. We've spoken to every department. They've got no problem. They've approved this request. And again, on October 6th, we'll be back to hold the public hearing and vote on this resolution. And again, any questions?
Any questions, Commissioner?
I think I saw the original, the one that you're surplusing or recommending.
Right.
I think I was out there, climb over a fence and home.
Yeah.
Is that the one?
That was the day we climbed, Commissioner Vaughn decided we would climb our fence to visit the location where the substation was actually built.
Yeah, that would be it.
You drove by. You didn't climb the fence here.
Yeah.
You climbed the fence.
It
was an eye-opening experience.
You're more agile than you look.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you, Maureen.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go back and pick up the wholesale water agreement with City of Snohomish and Jeff Kallstrom. Morning, Jeff.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Kallstrom. I'm the Chief Water Operations Officer. Thank you for giving me the grace and allowing me to be a little bit late today. I appreciate it. I had a meeting this morning and ran a little bit late. I wanted to be safe to get here. So what I have before you is a wholesale water agreement that we have with the City of Snohomish. And this is an amendment to that agreement. So the next slide, the purpose is just to familiarize you with the amendment. No expectations today, no action. The action is a request for a resolution at the October 6th meeting, at the next meeting. So that's where we're heading towards. This agreement with the city of Snohomish is to provide water. It was originally executed in 2012. It's to provide water on a temporary emergency basis. So out where the little pin drop is where the interconnection is. The city of Snohomish used to have a facility there where they could divert water from the Pilchuck River, treat it, and then bring that into their to their service territory. They had an intertie with us. They have an intertie with us to provide emergency supply in case that source was interrupted. In 2020, around that time frame, a little bit before that, the city of Snohomish decided to eliminate and stop utilizing that source from the Pilchuck River. So then that the tie-in with us became their supply for their pipeline that runs from the pin all the way down into the city of Snohomish. This amendment is just changing where the master meter is located. It doesn't change the nature of the agreement that was that was executed in 2020. And so this is more specific of what's happening. The yellow circle at the top is where the original tie-in is. It's moving down to the red circle. And effectively, there's a parallel pipe. The city of Snohomish has pipe on that line, and then we do as well. The city of Snohomish's pipe does not have any customers off of it, so they're going to abandon that section of their pipe. Otherwise, they'd have to repair it as it gets old and begins to leak. So they're going to abandon it, so they're just moving their point of interconnection, point of metering, down to North Carpenter Road. And that's it. No other terms are changing. No other modifications are being made. It's just simply that movement. And it shouldn't affect at all the amount of water they're purchasing from us or anything like that. And so then again, the next steps is on October 6th, we will bring a resolution to you to authorize the execution of the amendments from there. Any questions?
Thank you for that update. So this does this amendment going to impact any rights?
No, it won't impact any rights at all. It's the same arrangement that we have right now. It's just simply going to be where they pick up our water on into their pipe.
And it's not increased any money that we need to pay in order to move the location?
Nope. The city of Snohomish does the movement. They relocate the meter on their cost. So it is their that is their effort, that is their capital project that they will do on their at their dollar. So it's just simply saying that we agree that this will be the new point of interconnection.
Thank you. And then we're bypassing pipe that probably is pretty old.
Correct. Yeah, between these two circles, the city of Snohomish pipe there is quite old, and that's why they're looking to do that. It's beginning to leak or has the potential to leak. So, and we are not taking on that pipe. That pipe will be exactly.
No, I know.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeff. All right. Next up is the highly anticipated Snohomish County PUD Community Engagement and Multilingual Support presentation, and John Hoffman. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Oh.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Hoffman, your Chief Customer Officer, and joining me today is Naomi.
Hello, I'm Naomi Pola, and I'm Customer Service Representative. I'm also bilingual in Spanish and English.
And
yes.
Yes.
And we are two different heights, so we'll try to have the mic somewhere in the middle. If you can't hear us, let me know. Couple of things before we get started. One, please know that the two of us have the privilege of doing this presentation this morning, but a lot of different departments worked on this. This is an issue in terms of community engagement that is something that a lot of people here are passionate about, myself included. And so there may be times when I have to take your questions back to someone else because, again, multiple people had their fingerprints on this presentation. The other thing is, I believe each of you got a variety of brochures and or coloring books in multiple languages. So we will not take it personally if you decided that this is getting boring and you just want to start coloring. I will understand. Well, feel free to do that if necessary. In terms of our presentation today, there have been a lot of really good and healthy questions about how we're engaging our community here at the Commission. And we thought it was a good opportunity for us to stop, take a moment, and review some of those community engagement ways that we engage our community with you. And then also to collaborate with you if there's other suggestions or ideas you have on initiatives that we could do to improve in this area. This is an area where we are never going to get to spike the football. Our community is very diverse and is constantly changing. So I'm very interested in thoughts and feedback on how we can be effective in this space. There is no actions requested from the commission today, though. This is just informational only. So as mentioned, this is an area that is very important to the district. It's actually one of our strategic priorities, strategic priority three. Even if we didn't have strategic priorities, though, this would still be important to the district. It has been part of our fabric from our founding that we are an active member in our community. We want to strengthen those community connections. We want to be part of the economic vitality of our area. We want to have partnerships with our communities that have diverse needs. So this is something that's very important to both the district and again, something that is very important to me. So it is my pleasure to be able to speak to this morning. Our community is very diverse, which means we can't have a one size fits all on how we try to engage our community. So whether it be different events that we hold to try to engage different groups, such as our Energy Block Party that I know you all got to participate in this year, and thank you for being part of that activity and event with us. Two different projects where we are sponsoring the communication and translating the communication so that it can be reached by multiple members of our community. And that also goes to how we do our entire district-wide communication. So we know our consumers don't just consume information through one channel. So we have to be in multiple channels, whether that be social media, our e-newsletter, our websites. We also have engagements with multiple community partners that have alternative language publications.
Go back. I don't see our app on there.
Oh, that is a good catch. Our app is not on there, but our app is certainly, yes, a great way that we reach customers. Gosh, thank you. One thing we don't talk about as much when it comes to how we reach all members of our community is ADA compliance. So we have all these wonderful online offerings, but we also want to make sure that all of our customers can access them and enjoy them. So there was a big effort made in 2021 and it culminated in a redesign in 2022 of our website and a variety of our online offerings so that they would be ADA compliant. And last for me, before I turn over to Naomi, is that we have an engagement council that we've stood up. The idea being that we know that we need to continue to learn and grow in terms of how we're engaging with our community. This engagement council within our district is focused on how we get the broadest reach across our service territory. So some of the things that they're working on is tools to identify and track the demographic information of our community so we know where to target different advertisements or messaging. And in what languages. And that work, once we have that database available of our community, that work will be then for us to move forward and identify how best to utilize it to make sure that we're reaching our customers and filling any gaps we might have in our current communication strategy.
You're talking about the demographics and reaching the largest numbers first. And I'm just surprised Ukrainian, Russian,
yep.
Are they the largest?
No, so.
Did I misunderstand what you said?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, Ukrainian and Russian are certainly part of what I would call the big five languages that we have in our community. The really nice part is because we use translation services in addition to having bilingual representatives, we actually can see what languages our customers are asking to engage us in. Spanish by far is number one. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But I thought that Far Eastern main countries.
Again, Ukrainian and Russian are on the list, as is Vietnamese and Mandarin.
There's a lot of Ukrainian families moved into Ireland about 20 years ago.
Well, I'm not I'm just I'm curious that I would have thought that.
So can I wait?
Have our expert.
Oh, I hold this on the end. I don't know. Can you go back to the approach and channels? Okay. Yes, you mentioned the app, but also I want to. I really appreciate all the efforts and everything that you guys are doing. It's amazing. Amazing. I think that we have to acknowledge also the 100%, I want to speak the Latino community here in Washington State, 100%, 40% of that, they don't able to read and write and don't Spanish. So sometimes, even though the schools or other organizations or the services, they said, okay, we translate in Spanish, but that's cool. But if the parents, they don't able to read and write and don't Spanish, so it's not, it's how they're that going to help them. So I want to only acknowledge that. And also, when I was working as a director of the Latino enrollment for the 74 Catholic schools here in Washington, I did a research and focus groups. And one thing that keep the attention is when I ask, what is the best way to communicate with you? And one thing that came out is other. And I asked, what is other? And it's the churches. Because the majority of the Latinos, we visit more often the churches here than our own countries for the sense of belonging. So saying that, you don't have to be Catholic or you don't have to be Christian or other religions, but relationships, they are crucial. So what happened is after the mass, the priests, they start to share all the resources that happen, sorry, that happens in all the community. So that's a good advertise. It's a free marketing, but it's building relationships. So they are very open because they care about the community and they know the community visit more often the churches or temples. So it's something that you might explore. Many people do. Community college, all other organizations. And sometimes if you're lucky, they invite you to stop at the podium and share. And if people know that you are there and they are reach out to you. So, and also the, I want to emphasize one more time, the Snow Eye Libraries. They have people, they are bilingual, they create a sense of belonging already in there. And they are, the families, they bring all the kids for all the activities that happen. So it's a good opportunity. Thank you.
Very good suggestions. And I do think we're going to touch a little bit on Spanish language that is verbal instead of written. But very good suggestions. Thank you.
So we do offer a lot of multilingual support. And online is probably one of my favorites. Just given that I speak Spanish and like Ms. Altamirano Crosby mentioned, not all of them are tech savvy, or you will get different dialects. And sometimes my dialect may not coincide with theirs. And then we're just trying to find a middle ground. So we do offer about 15 languages for a website that it gets translated. Ukrainian, Russian are there, along with Spanish. This comes in handy every day because a lot of our customers don't know that our website can do this. So, you know, they call for information. I'm like, oh, let me take you to the website. You know, they know how to get there. They just don't know how to read it or, you know, where to push. So then on the top left corner, you just push here and you can translate the whole information into Spanish or whatever language it is that they feel comfortable using. We also have additional items such as our payment and self-authentication channels that are in Spanish. We offer documents, forms in Spanish, some in Ukrainian as well. And we're currently exploring other multilingual support, such as emails, push notifications, outages, text, so forth.
It was interesting you mentioned the dialects, because that was a question that I had on how do you weave your way through that. Anyway, I'm just making a comment.
And here's a short little video just to show, you know, if I'm in conversation, I'm like on the top left corner, you can just click Spanish and you'll see it. Translate the page for you.
Who do you use for translate the website?
It's Google. It's Google. It was on the previous slide, yes. Really like this video?
I think I accidentally looped it again. This is where the technical challenge is. Okay, there we go.
Like, he really likes it.
I know. It's a great video.
Station.
Go back to that page where the great video is. So when you select a different language, you can then perform everything the website has everywhere in it.
Just about.
Okay.
So if you click any links to documents or anything, those will revert. So like, for example, if they want to apply for the income qualified assistance application in order to get the discounts if they apply, the form will upload still in English. So we're still transitioning. We're still working towards it. But there is the application that they could click on that downloads a PDF that they could fill out in Spanish.
So if they, we'll just use Spanish, continue in Spanish. So if they set the language to Spanish and then they log into their account, is everything, their bills, everything in Spanish there?
Any documents will still be in English. So if it's invoices, notices, they're still in English. We haven't gotten there. When I ask about it, because I'm always asking, well, we're rolling this out. I'm like, oh, it's going to be in Spanish. You know, what I need to know. So whatever is supported by the website,
right? So
accept documents.
Right. So if there's a list of previous payments, that'll all be in Spanish.
Yes.
Their current bill and the date due will be in Spanish.
Right. So if they go to the website, they can see their history of payments, invoices. But once they click the PDF to see the details,
yeah,
it's in English. And that's typically the phone calls that I get a lot. Is transit. Also, we do offer personal services, customer service support. Like myself, I'm a bilingual in Spanish only, and I did have to get certified. What that looked like is I had to take an oral test at Everett Community College, asked me a series of questions, situations, scenarios, and I had to reply in Spanish just to make sure that my conversational skills were adequate in order to fulfill the job requirements. We also have bilingual frontline CSRs, or customer service representatives. And we also work with additional, I'm not sure if it's companies or who it is that we work with that helps us transcreate letters, pamphlets, and other materials that the district needs. Then human resources, you know, is partnering with community organizations. So I do appreciate your suggestions there. We do work with Snohomish and Island County Labor, Tlaloc Tribes, Women's and Trade Fair and Trades Fair, Veterans Affair, and so forth.
Before we move on to the next slide, this human resources slide was actually the most controversial slide in the entire presentation because they have a huge list of partners that they work with, and there was no way we were going to get them all on the slide. So please know this is just a sampling of who they're working with to get information out. Also, we are out in the field. So we are out there, whether it be through vegetation management, whether it be through restoring services. And so our field teams do have translated materials that they can hand out in those situations, as well as you got to see the wonderful coloring book that Water has and a variety of other tools that Water uses to reach customers both in English and Spanish. But one thing we wanted to spend a little bit of time calling out, because I'm spoiled to have Naomi here with me, but there are situations where we don't have bilingual team members available when customers approach us. So one of the things that we have been rolling out to our community offices and here in our Everett lobby is what we call a ILA device. And right now I'm trying to blank on what the ILA stands for. It's called an ILA device. And we're about to do a demo on how it works.
That's what I got.
Now it's for language. Is it my turn?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So as he mentioned, they are at the community offices. When speaking with the frontline representatives that use these with our customers, they appreciate having it handy. It comes in use every day. And even some field reps will come in, borrow it for a few hours, take it out to the field if they have to do a customer visit, and then they'll bring it back. So they really like having the option of this device. It does offer 120 languages and dialects, and you'll see during the demonstration. And the only caveat is it's super sensitive. If there's anybody else in the lobby, any other customers, it will pick up words from the other conversation. And then that's where the translation gets muddy, right? Because the person's like, that's not what I said. And then they have to repeat themselves. And then sometimes text, typing it in ends up being a better option than speech to text. And then we're gonna do a short demonstration here. Any questions so far?
How expensive are they?
I do not know. I know that they are within our budget for translation services.
As long as it's in the budget.
Yeah.
So can it be connected to a phone?
Good question.
To manage a phone call?
So it does need to be connected to Wi-Fi or a hotspot in order for all the functionalities to work. If you wanted to do speech to text, that needs the Wi-Fi or the hotspot connection. If you don't have that connection, then it's just text to text.
I guess what I'm asking, let's say a customer that speaks Ukrainian calls in on the phone, and a customer service rep tie this into the phone and then have a conversation with them.
There wouldn't be need to use this one just because we have interpretive services that we could also get on the phone.
Gotcha. Thank you.
But follow the question. You mentioned hotspot in order the phones work. So do we have in our budget when you go outside, like for example, last Saturday, an emergency fair day, I saw the team the PUD attend. So do they have the hotspot there in order like provide help or support if they don't have those devices, and then they can utilize the cell phones, connect with the hotspot, because sometimes people, they are limited in internet, and I don't know. Yes.
Yeah, when it comes to the field, I'm not quite sure just because I don't work out in the field. That's probably something.
So yes, on our district phones, we can access a remote hotspot if we need to, though most of the locations we're at do have Wi-Fi because, we'll be in a school district or we'll be here at the block party or something like that. So it hasn't come up a lot, but yes, we can use a hotspot.
I'm glad to hear that and the people that have listened to this because if they are not able to have internet, we provide them, with your cell phones for the team, the PUD, and they can help them with the translation on interpretation. So that's nice to know. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to do our demo. We hope you'll be able to hear it. Reminder to the audience that you can't talk during this part.
Unless you want to test that part. Okay. So this is which would be our PUD side, right? And then this other screen is for the customer where they start the conversation. They choose the language and the dialect. So I will be the customer. Okay. I'm choosing Espanol. And then different dialects, such as Estados Unidos, United States, Argentina, Bolivia, Chile. So I'm just gonna choose United States because I was born here, even though my parents are from Mexico. Make sure your speaker's on over there.
Oh, I didn't my speaker's on, sorry. Okay.
You gotta hold it down. Remember?
It's been a while since we did this demo, right? Welcome to Snohomish County PUD. How can I help you?
The volume is so low.
Welcome to Snohomish County PUD. How can I help you?
Sorry, the volume is very low, but it's telling me in Spanish, and it's also translating it in text, so then I'm able to read it. And then if, let's say, they are they need the font larger, you can enlarge it in order to accommodate their needs.
Hola, tuve el placer de conocer a la señora Olsen. Ella fue maravillosa conmigo y solo quería pasar y hacerle saber.
Hello, I had the pleasure of meeting Mrs. She was wonderful to me, and I just wanted to stop by and let you know.
Thank you for letting us know about your experience with Commissioner Olsen. You're happy to help if there's anything further.
No es todo, gracias. Que tenga buen día.
That's not all, thank you. Have a nice day.
You have a nice day as well.
And then it tells me que tengas un buen día on my side.
Impressive.
Yes. Another caveat when I was playing around with it is if you choose the wrong dialect, it won't always pick up the words. So given that my parents are from Mexico and I was born and raised here, my Spanish isn't fully from Mexico. So when I used the Mexican dialect, it wasn't picking up my type of enunciations. So then I had to play with it. I'm like, okay, I'm better off using state Spanish dialect.
One thing that's really nice about this as well is I'm sure you can imagine that a lot of our customers that don't speak English as their primary language will bring in relatives or family members to translate for them. And it is amazing. I've seen this in the lobby where we have a child that's doing translation, but now, they don't always know all of the utility terms or what's happening on the account. And so the moment we can turn this on and use it to translate directly for the customer, it can be a huge benefit even for those customers who didn't think they were going to need it.
I was in the office one day and a Ukrainian speaking customer came in and I saw one of our representatives use this device for Ukrainian. I'm like, oh, that's really wonderful. Like I haven't seen it in a different language other than Spanish. And it went smoothly. I mean, there was nobody else in the lobby, right? But it went smoothly and the customer was very happy not have to struggle going through the transaction. Yes.
I have a question. How many devices do we have?
I know for sure we have 3 here in Everett. And then I don't know how many we bought for our community offices, but we have them in the community offices as well.
And what is the scope of the current community engagement? Do you have the metrics or data regarding how many times or how is the engagement, how we can measure that?
Yeah, there is unfortunately not any metrics on how often they're checked out. But to Naomi's point, they're checked out frequently because of our community events or because people are going to be in an area where they want to make sure they have translation services available.
We thinking to buy more device in order to provide more services in the future that we have in the budget.
I know that Allison actually was engaged in a demo of different products. These are designed to be hardy. I mean, if you hold it, it's a heavy wrapped device, and there are potentially other tablet or phone devices that would be more affordable because they're not built to that level. And so that is definitely something that we're looking at.
Thank you.
And also real quick, can I just add that we're also looking at making the meetings so that they can translate through the meetings as well. They would just click on a QR code that would put up and then they would be able to hear the meetings in their language.
And ILA stands for Instant Language Assistant.
Thank you.
Well, okay. Thank you. So one last piece, and this is something that will be important for you as a board because our commission, because we don't know exactly what this will look like, but we know it's something that's going to be important for us for next steps. So Commissioner Logan brought up the what on the website gets translated, what doesn't. Naomi talked about we would love to start pushing out communications in the customer's language preference. To make all those things happen, we need a way to retain what a customer's language preference is. And so it is one of our strategic priorities, priority 2.2.D, to actually create a centralized customer preference management tool. And I think when people hear that, they immediately go to, well, does someone want a call or a text? And yeah, that's part of it. It also, we would hope, would cover what hours someone would prefer to be contacted and different things like that. But language is certainly a huge part of that. Because if we had that ability to retain that this is a customer who, for example, speaks Spanish, then we could proactively translate their documents. So the unfortunate part is that there isn't a ready, convenient solution in SAP for this type of contact management. So we do have a team now that is working on identifying a solution for us.
Question. Is that something that, in terms of information that we retain about the customer, are there any issues with that? I mean, like we have usage and that sort of thing, but I thought there were some restrictions.
Yeah, this is an interesting question, one that we're seeing more and more of with our vendor contracts. Yeah. You know, who owns the data and where is the data going? Joanne Jones in our office in the legal department does a phenomenal job along with IT and contracts management evaluating our vendor contracts for those things. In this particular instance, there was language that said a lot of that conversation would be uploaded into the cloud and the vendor was reserving the right to do what they wanted with that information. Sensitive customer information. We ultimately came to terms with the vendor. We were able to remove those provisions and feel really confident that we're able to protect customer data. But it's something that we're having to be incredibly vigilant as we look through these contracts. These devices are convenient, technology is awesome, but there's a lot of data, volumes of data that are created that we're obligated to protect. And we take that obligation really seriously.
I would like to add something. Well, how the schools retain that? Because when you have a child, and you go and do the registration, it is that what is the language preference? Because they want to identify exactly and be intentional what language and they have in the data. So-and-so speak Spanish, so-and-so speak Ukraine, and this family, so it's how they do in the school. So can we do something similar or maybe perhaps get information for school districts, what vendors do they use or something like that? Or what is the protocols and policies they follow in order to retain all the information?
Yeah, we're certainly able to capture language preferences. It's the information that gets conveyed between the district and the customer that we want to make sure we're careful about. I'm not certain how school districts do it. I can only tell you how we do it and how we manage within our data and information governance team, how we manage that data. And we're very sensitive to being a public agency, how we protect sensitive customer information and employee information. And we usually do that through our contractual relationship with third party vendors, making sure we retain ownership and we retain the rights to all of that information.
So, but just to make sure we're in sync here, you're talking about Commissioner Altamirano Crosby. Once we know what the customer's preference is, then that's how we would engage with that customer. And once that is indicated to us, then we capture that, and that's how we would engage with that customer going forward. What's your?
Well, there's a rich engagement there, because if you identify what customer and you build your own data, and then you are going to have, I mean, the clarity, I mean, how many people that we serve, how the million that we serve, well, I'm going to make it up, right? I mean, how many customers do we have, and what is the language preference, although everything is in English, but if we can perhaps engage with those customers and their own language, could be very rich.
Yeah, I think that's the intent of this particular initiative, is that we can, through the customer engagement, you identify or they identify what their preference language is, and then that's how we would engage with them in the future.
And I think that what council was speaking to, and I may be wrong, is the information that goes into the cloud. Is that correct? Which we don't want to lose.
Yeah, absolutely.
That ownership and rights, so.
Protecting it, yeah.
Yeah.
Protecting. Absolutely,
yeah.
I want to
get that you say. Beyond, yes, recognizing what their language preference is.
You want to,
right,
yes.
That correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We certainly want to manage a really rich experience for our customers and making sure that that includes a confidence in the safety and security of their sensitive information that they're sharing with us. So my point was only when we use these devices, we're very careful about making sure we continue to put that information into our systems that we've got control over. But preference management, customer preferences, those are all important qualities that this initiative will capture and we can continue to improve on.
You want to call out before we move on the school district topic, because it's a great point. We didn't talk about it that much, but we do partner with the school districts for things like the reduced lunches as a way to verify income for some of our assistance programs. So we certainly partner with the school districts today, and if we had an ability to capture these language preferences, we would love to use the school districts.
So in the future, if I wanted my bill in French, that would be a possibility, that every interaction I would have with the utility would be in French.
Yes, however.
In the future.
This is where I got to be careful not to overcommit our CorpCom team, because we would absolutely be prioritizing those efforts. And I think it is dangerous for us to have a process for customers to make an election and then have nothing happen where they do. So we talked about, even though we could capture all the languages, unless we're ready to turn on an experience and say, if you choose Spanish, everything you're going to see from that point forward is going to be translated, we shouldn't turn it on.
Right.
Question. Speaking of questions, I didn't get to our question slide. Does anyone have any additional questions?
I only had one comment. I'm really impressed with everything that you are doing with your team in order to make it easy for the customers can engage and we can utilize those devices, you know, to, I remember for 2 years don't speak English and was very frustrated. You feel wordless and you feel that you don't belong in any area. And I think that we are helping our communities and the grassroots, and we are very intentional. I said this, have a good intentions versus being intentional. So I think the beauty, we are very intentional and in what we are doing. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
I learned a lot this morning.
Well, and while I appreciate all the technology and program focus that we have, really makes it happen is our bilingual team members. So,
yeah. Gracias to the bilingual equipos.
I have a couple of questions. So, I was trying to log in my app and ask for the app. Does the app have any of this capability? Okay.
Yeah, sometimes I'll take a Spanish speaking call and I have to clarify, are you on the website or on the app?
Oh, yeah.
Most of them use the app. Then I'm like, is the app in Spanish or is it English? You know, the app is a little, I'm not familiar how the app works. I haven't touched base with, call them protect team, on how it works. Cause I've noticed that depending on what phone type of phone they have, it's going to defer if they could see it in English or Spanish. And I'm not sure if it's an option So I'm still working on trying to figure that portion out.
Sorry, I would like to add something. So what is your recommendation with a person they never navigate in the system ever, app or the website, if you receive a phone call?
I first ask them, do you feel comfortable using the internet?
Okay.
Because depending their background mm-hmm. or their accessibility to these items, I just ask them a general question before I learn anything else from them.
Thank you.
And then the last thing is, Commissioner Julieta El Corrado, mentioned a few times, some locations with high population of, let's say, Hispanic-speaking individuals. Do we offer those public libraries, do we offer them materials in multiple languages so that they can know how to contact us? It's not like once they can contact us, they can get assistance in virtually every language.
Yeah, it's why we wanted to hand out some of the different brochures that we offer in different languages. Now, admittedly, that's limited. I mean, we have a lot of different languages that are spoken in our community, sure. And we primarily are targeting Spanish or Ukrainian with those translations. But yes, it is something that where we can provide those materials, but also that is work that the Engagement Council is doing to try to identify those neighborhoods where maybe we do need to lean into a different language as our first point of language.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very nice to meet you.
Meet you all.
Thank you for the coloring brochures.
Fantastic. We got for Commissioner
Naomi and John. How about a break?
Sure. Let's take a 8-minute break. It's 10:12. Let's come back at 10:20.
Okay.
And we are back.
Okay. Next up is our phase five of our 2025 Integrated Resource Plan. Landon Snyder and Chris Scudder. Morning, Landon.
Morning, Commissioners. Morning, John. I'm Landon Snyder. I'm a utility analyst here in the Power Supply Department. And next to me here is Chris Scudder, who's going to be doing probably most of the presentation. And I would like to say that they took away the ILA device, which puts me at a disadvantage because I speak IRP, and I think that's one of the dialects. There you go. All right. So, I'm glad I got a laugh to start. All right. So we're off to a great start. So here's the agenda. So we're going to go back in time and kind of, briefly talk about where we've been, where we are now, which is phase five, the final phase of the IRP. And part of the phase five really fundamentally is our long-term resource strategy. And there's those three bullet points there. There's a 2-year, 4-year, and 10-year target. Those are kind of statutory things that we have to set. But that's not the entirety of the long-term resource strategy. Those are just three highlighted points. And then we're going to talk about the action plan, which is what we actually do as staff to achieve those targets and to, implement our long-term resource strategy. And then we're going to talk next steps. Of note, though, that box on the right-hand side there, this briefing is informational. We're not asking for any decisions at this time, but we would like feedback and your support here as we head toward that finish line here at the end of Q4. Oh, where we've been. So we started, came before you guys, earlier this year, back in January, and then we've been back every 2-3 months or so. I think you just saw me last month, but we covered from IRP, like scoping it out, to doing our load forecasts, to evaluating different resources that are out there and what those resources can do to fill our portfolio, and then the cost of those resources. And then we did our optimization, our big math problem, just about a month ago or so. Now we're here today to talk about how to bring that math into reality, right? And put it in our long-term resource strategy to get that least cost option and hit those targets. So resource strategy, the right-hand side there is kind of where I'm going to start here, is that graph. So those are our cost-effective resource stack that we want to go out and get over that 20-year period. So you'll see... kind of annual basis 26 through 45, and you'll see four different resources: energy efficiency, with us forever. It's not going away. It's a great resource, right? Locally sited solar, utility scale clean energy resources, and then Bonneville Tier 2 is kind of in between that that green area with the utility scale clean energy to kind of fill the gaps as needed. And that kind of line at the top, that's more or less kind of our load growth. So these are all the different resources that are going to serve our load growth starting in 26 here. One thing to note that's not on that graph is demand response and rates programs. That is part of our resource stack. It just doesn't serve kind of load on that average basis. So it didn't make sense to put it on this graph, but it is still part of our resource strategy. And you will see that in future slides.
But I do have a question. Do you want questions at the end or?
Feel free. We're already here.
on the second bullet, mm-hmm. is that telling me that the decision has been made to use Tier 2 all the time? What says short-term BPA Tier 2 power is used as a bridge? I thought that you were still looking at potential alternatives that would be more cost-effective or have a lower risk. No.
Well, so basically the, basically the short-term tier two is basically you again, like, yeah. So we have it as kind of a backstop, right? So we need to get renewables up to a point to serve load like cost effectively and meet compliance targets. And then after that, we can use short-term tier two as kind of the least cost option to serve any additional load or load in between sections. According to the math,
the market,
right?
Okay.
But I mean, so obviously we kind of do these studies and resource things like every couple of years. So based on all our research, we did this IRP. Yeah, like just to serve load at a pure megawatt hour basis. Yeah, but there still is compliance needs. So that's why we have other ways to serve load and even reduce load, right?
You go through a solver process, right? Where you have different options.
Correct.
And so it picks the lowest cost thing. And so I would guess for 2039, the lowest cost thing, or because a project's in the middle of getting built, we're going to use more tier two at that point.
Yeah, at least.
By 2042, something wonderful is going to come on. We're not going to need it as much.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Picking the lowest cost.
Right, yeah. It basically, lowest cost to meet all the different metrics that right. we have. Compliance metrics, load serving metrics, et cetera.
Yeah.
Right.
Is locally sited solar separated from all the other utility, because they're not utility scale?
Yeah, correct. Like, we wanted to highlight that. Okay. So basically, the locally sited solar would be a combination of, like, kind of what we're calling, like, a I guess medium scale solar, and then which would be sited locally here, as well as customer owned solar. Okay. So, all right. So, but yeah, basically the resource stack not radically different, right? Conservation and response, big renewables, small renewables, not radically different from other IRPs. Just the big difference is the driver. Primarily speaking, it's we have CEDA requirements and we have EIA requirements, which are the two big pieces of legislation, and we have to hit those targets. And then that final point, it does create a very diverse portfolio. All right. So first up, biennial conservation targets. We are required by statute to acquire all cost-effective energy efficiency and conservation. So we do the math, we figure out what that is, and then we have a target. And this biennial target from 26 and 27 is going to be 7.5 annual average megawatts. Context, I think we've talked about this in previous briefings, but this is about three-ish average megawatts lower. And that is because codes and standards have increased for building stock. And then also we've done a really good job of acquiring a lot of conservation out there. And by we, I mean our energy services team, not me. but we still have to reach this target. And so that's what we're going to do. And I'm going to hand it over to Chris here, who's going to talk about the big stuff.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Chris Scudder. I work in the power supply department. I'm going to talk to you first about a couple of CEDA statute requirements for targets, and then we'll talk about the action plan and kind of how we execute the long-term resource strategy. So first, we're going to talk about the CEIP, or Clean Energy Implementation Plan. This is part of CEDA, requires us to identify the conservation, demand response, and renewable energy resources we plan to acquire in a four-year period. You see them there on the right in block form and on the left in number form. So we'll be publishing this in the CEIP, which is a separate document, which you will adopt hopefully at the end of the year here. And that'll be published to the State Department of Commerce. Next thing is 10-year CEAP, Clean Energy Action Plan targets, also part of CETA. And that requires us to identify conservation, demand response, distributed energy resources, renewable resources, and non-emitting resources. So slightly different look at the world, but this is kind of the front half of our long-term resource strategy. On the right, you can see where kind of everything blocks out. This one does show demand response. So this is in nameplate. And then on the left, you can see those 10-year targets. So these are setting pretty ambitious goals for some of these things, but otherwise not remarkably different than our long-term resource strategy. Questions on those two?
I will say this does look for distributed energy. That looks good. It's not redistributed the demand response. That does look like a pretty aggressive.
That's a question. Yeah, thank you. Demand response seems to be.
Yep. So
be confident we can.
We have confidence that our teams can execute that. You know, we've been working a lot with a number of our teams to set ourselves up for success in the future. There's some work that needs to be done prior to developing these programs, but they do offer a low cost way of helping to mitigate our demand charges. One thing I will note here on the CEAP, this is not a separate document. It is published as part of our IRP. So when you go to read the draft IRP, it'll be in one of the appendices. I think it's Appendix B. So we've got the numbers. We know kind of what the targets look like, but now we need to figure out how to execute that. And in terms of strategy timeline, we have some near-term targets and mid to long-term targets. So those are gonna be the first five-ish years. That kind of gets us out to 2030. And then mid to long-term is gonna be 2030 and beyond out to 2045. So in the near term, acquire 7 average megawatts conservation by 2027. That's our biennial conservation target. We are gonna acquire RECs as needed for regulatory compliance. That's for both EIA and CETA once it hits in 2030. To your comment earlier about tier two, we are gonna be evaluating and making a tier two election in the 2028 contract. We need to make that election early next year. So EPA has not fully published all the details on tier two yet. So we're gonna have about 6 to 8 months worth of sort of studying tier two before we can make that election. We got some local solar investments. Those are here within the county. Develop our smart rate and demand response programs, right? We've been doing a lot of that work over time. Here's where we need to execute over the next 5 years. And then we want to evaluate clean energy, utility scale clean energy resources as they become available and invest as appropriate. So it'll depend on when the projects are available to invest in and if they have the right sort of characteristics.
Example?
Big solar farm in Yakima. Or we talked about Ruby Flats a couple weeks ago. Something like that. Maybe a big wind farm in Gorge.
I'm just curious. Do you think the CETA regulations, one day going to be impacted by federal regulations?
CETA is a state statute.
I'm aware, but somehow, right? I mean, they are doing or pass different laws at federal level that I know that each state has their own regulations, but could exist the possibility that somehow will be impact? I have no idea. I'm just curious.
Yeah. We have worked through this IRP under the sort of policy environment that we have today. We have many opportunities to do these if we see a policy environment that's substantially different. So if CETA is somehow hit with some form of federal requirements, we would certainly at that point identify that and modify our future IRPs. So
thank you.
Got a question about local solar.
Sure.
So I mean, We know that the sun shines more in other parts of Washington.
Yep.
So are these customer driven? We have customers that want to make large investments, and we're accommodating that. And there's some minimum, beneficial aspects to us as well.
So local solar, and I can talk about this in the action plan a little bit, but local solar investments come in two flavors for us. One is larger customer owned systems, so kind of 50 kilowatts or so. That was driven by both a regulatory need and the outcome of our solar potential assessment that we did for the first time this time. And that was kind of a confluence of customer requests, right? We hear still do more rooftop solar from customers pretty consistently through our public process.
Of course, aren't they losing their incentives?
Yeah. I'm not sure if they're losing incentives at the federal level, but we did assume changes to resources there. And then the other part of that is the big, medium-sized 5-megawatt solar farms. Those have some pretty unique regulatory and transmission benefits to us. So we wanted those for those kind of benefits.
And, okay, so the last bullet, your example was solar.
Mm-hmm.
But we're looking beyond solar.
Yes.
The evaluate utilities. Okay.
Yep.
Which could be a number.
Yeah, the bottom one there could encompass any number of renewable projects. It's kind of on a project by project basis. So we looked at, in particular for this IRP, we looked at Montana wind, Gorge wind, and utility scale solar in the sort of near term as the three resources that we potentially have available. And then as we get out, right, 2030 and beyond, we want to continue to make some of those demand side resource investments. We're going to continue to invest in our conservation and demand response programs. We're going to continue to use REC acquisitions and clean energy resource investments balanced against each other for both load growth needs and regulatory compliance needs. And then we need to balance those two ways of accomplishing our goals while keeping our costs low and minimizing the risks. So that's kind of the timeline that gets us, when we need to do kind of some of these actions, but that is not an action plan. Next thing is taking that and turning it into a set of actions for staff. We looked at these and decided that there were kind of three broad categories of actions that staff could take. Resource actions, those are going to be sort of what acquire or make progress on developing this thing to meet our resource goals. There are policy actions. These are sort of ongoing engagements at a local or regional level to ensure that we are at the table for some of these big developing long-standing commitments that we have. And then continuous improvement actions. These are going to be actions where we build on successes from the past and learn and continue to enhance our capabilities and tools. I do want to shout out here both staff and the tech team as a whole for giving us a lot of feedback on this, and then the ELT for providing great feedback on the action plan. So we'll go through each of these here in just a second. Start with resource actions. So this does not look remarkably different from the sort of timeline bit. We want to get the 7.5 annual watts of cost-effective conservation. Demand response and smart rates. We do have targets in there for 4 and 10 year targets for demand response in the document. And then we want to develop the large, I want to say PUD solar. So that's going to be your 5-megawatt type projects and work on some programs for larger customer owned solar resources. So that's going to have kind of two flavors to it. There's still some work to do on regional renewable energy projects to prepare for potential procurement. We got to go out and see what's available, see what's being developed, and make sure we're engaged with that process. Have to do some tier two work and make an election in early 2026 on what flavor of tier two we want and how much of it we want right up front. And then not included in our strategy, in our long-term resource strategy, but definitely worth a second look is a local energy battery energy storage projects. So we want to do some due diligence on battery energy storage costs, benefits, local T&D benefits and whatnot. So there's some work to do there.
Got a question on the tier two election. So are we locked in for the 20-year contract, or can we switch that election from year to year? Or
you will make an election for which version we want first,
right?
Which kind of tier two, right? Long-term or short-term.
Right.
And then there are some caveats after that. So if we take long-term, which again, we don't quite know what that looks like right now.
Right.
We do have outs if we determine that that's not a viable strategy for us. So,
no, but I guess I don't understand. Can you switch from one tier two option to another tier two option in the future? You can get out, but yeah. Can you switch to another product?
No, not really.
Okay.
So once you've made an election, and like I said, there's so
that's a big decision.
There's some caveats there. Yeah. Okay. Like I said, there's
yeah. Okay.
I'm thinking.
Okay. I don't want to say that there are no ability to switch. Okay. It's just it depends on kind of that election.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question, and I don't remember which slide, but cost effective. So when you're making these determinations, what are you measuring against? The load following rate or the tier two rate?
So the first step of that is determine what's available and what the market barriers are going to be, right? So we have achievable and then technical achievable. And then against that, we are comparing to, it's not a direct comparison. It's not like a one-to-one, but it is comparing against regulatory needs and other resources that could potentially fill that load need. So it could be tier two, it could be a supply side resource, it could be different, another kind of supply side resource, or it could be conservation. So we select right up front the bucket that we want. Garrison?
Hey, Garrison Morris, Senior Manager of Power Supply. Just in case it's helpful, we run huge algorithms to determine the lowest cost portfolios across all of the scenarios and sensitivities that we've talked about as a group and that PUD subject matter experts have talked about as a group. The resources that are part of the lowest cost portfolio, those are the cost effective resources. So for our long-term resource strategy, the fundamental, foundation of that is the base case scenario. So in sort of the largest sense, cost-effective conservation is the amount of conservation that resulted in the lowest cost portfolio for the base case. And the same for other resource types.
So that's a third of the actions or so. The next bucket of actions.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem. Policy actions. So these are kind of ongoing engagements that we as staff either are doing now or we expect to need to do in the future. Some of them are relatively self-explanatory, right? We want to comply with clean energy regulations. Regional policy for the transmission system is an ongoing effort at the BPA level. So we want to make sure that our staff are engaged to make sure that there's enough firm transmission to serve our load. So, organized markets are still in development. We're engaged there and want to continue to be engaged as a load following customer to ensure that we're achieving those low cost outcomes for our customers. We are currently, I think, a regional leader. People come to us with questions and opinions at the regional level. We want to continue to be regional leader in power transmission policy issues. And then the last one there is sort of a nod to some of the news that you hear out in the world, right? Regionally, nationally, there's concerns about new large loads. So we want to develop a strategy and a framework for handling new large load requests.
really ever think, well, they'll be knocking on my door.
They are. Yeah, they seem to be in a place where they don't, the cost of power is not as important. So,
we want to have a comprehensive strategy.
All opportunities.
Well, I think you've already all developed the right structure. I mean, right.
We're still working through.
Like they have to pay for it.
Yeah, that's all because the crux of it. But yeah, we're trying to really clearly define what that will look like at different tiers of larger loads. And we have a couple inquiries that are allowing us to work on that real time. And Colin and team are doing a great job of navigating that. Yeah, to try to think first and foremost on behalf of our customers and how that would impact them.
Right, we want to protect the current customers.
Yep.
A lot of new burden.
Yep.
And the last set of actions, they're continuous improvement actions. Carrying over from 2023, we have a developing fusion sector here in Snohomish County. We want to continue to develop and explore those partnerships as appropriate.
How far? We're talking beyond.
Yeah.
Years.
Yep. Our IRP assumed that fusion was in the mid to late 2030s into the early 2040s. I think we set it at 2041, if I recall off the top of my head. That was a fairly conservative estimate based on what the companies are telling us, but we don't want to have our resource plan based on something that doesn't currently exist, and we don't
want to jump in.
But we want to keep those doors open and make sure that we're engaging with those companies to have a positive relationship with them.
And I think it's made us famous having utilities to have fusion in their IRPs.
That's it.
Yeah.
I'll go out and start. I know we're not the only.
You mentioned to me several times. So.
Okay.
Well,
it is exciting.
Looking to the future.
Yeah.
You know, we also try to be on the leading edge with Tidal. Look where that got us.
I'm very glad that John Hoffman came up before me, because here we kind of want to take some of those similar ideas and bring them into our IRP public processes. We did more public outreach during this IRP cycle than we ever have in the past. And we did start to incorporate some multilingual assistance with that. But we want to continue to build on those successes and work with our engagement team to build that public process. And then we want to continue to develop the tools that we're using so that we can achieve the lowest reasonable cost for our customers, right? We've got these new set of tools in the load following product, and we've got some more work to do there, both cross-functionally across the district and within our own team to continue to develop those tools so they're more robust. Any questions on the action plan?
I'm still thinking in that question or comment for Commissioner C regarding the performative two in May at tier two election in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
What could be the worst scenario? I mean, because it's a big decision. And could you elaborate a little bit?
The worst case scenario?
Yes.
The worst case scenario is something that we would certainly be looking out for. We want to make sure that as we're going through the tier two election process, we fully understand the products that Bonneville is offering, both in terms of their capabilities and their attributes and potentially their downsides, so that we're appropriately capturing those risks. I don't want to speculate on what a worst case scenario would be, because
I really always, I want to have plan A, B, and C all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason I asked.
Yeah. I think the worst case we could have would be to have some stranded
costs where we've made it an election that leads to some stranded costs somewhere.
More on tier two?
And if you want, we can send you more of the phase two slide deck or phase three slide deck on tier two.
And I imagine next year we'll be talking about this in this election and have some presentations
to
understand it more through.
Just quickly, you know, we probably have modeled in some respects the worst case scenario for tier two. For us, with our regulatory exposure, a tier two product without a lot of recs behind it results in other investments that are needed. And so when we modeled the long-term tier two, which is backed by BPA's long-term plan, we looked at their most recent long-term plan, and it was mostly market resources for a prolonged period of time. So in that scenario, both of the tier two options don't really have a whole lot of recs to them, which is part of what's driving in this plan some of the renewable build out. What we want to really do in this tier two analysis is evaluate, has anything changed for Bonneville, where that long-term tier two product could have more recs and potentially displace some of the renewable resources or just give us a little bit different of a mix.
So, but currently that's not what it looks like.
That's not what Bonneville's current plans are looking at their 2024 resource program. So we want to make sure that our planning is tuned to their planning. We make a really good long-term decision.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, I guess the positive is that we have it as an option.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. So that's that's the real positive. Yeah. We
tier
keep
two,
the lights on with it.
Tier two is sort of our backstop resource. And the short term tier two has some nice benefits. It flexes with being able to grow with our load until we acquire a new resource to displace it. So that is a big, long action plan. It's a lot of work for staff to do, but sort of worked with our cohorts around the PUD and pretty confident that staff, we're confident that staff can execute this. Next steps for us here at the mission is we're targeting an October 13th release of the draft IRP. So for everybody's review, concurrent with that, we are going to release the SEPA review and that'll be a 30-day comment window. So, we'll have a 30-day window from October 13th to get public comments on our SEPA filing. October 21, we want to do a high-level walkthrough with you on the IRP draft. And then December 2nd, which is just after we finish up that SEPA process, we're going to come to you with public hearings on the 25 IRP, 25 CEIP, and the 26-27 biennial conservation targets. And then December 16th, which is the last commission meeting of the year, we want to have resolutions to adopt those three documents. So we have a pathway to the end of the year, but there's quite a bit of work here in this last quarter to land this plane as we come into the beginning of 2026.
We start the next one in January?
Yes.
I'll wait on Earth Week.
Questions, commissioners?
I have none.
No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for all the hard work.
Yeah, great job, Chris and Landon and Harrison. This is always a heavy lift, or especially this phase of the process. So great job. That is it for presentations this morning.
Thanks. Next, we have item four, our CEO General Manager report.
We do have a couple of things to share. First, the new district's owner agent portal went live on Tuesday, September 16th. Owners and landlords with agreements can now use the landlord option in My Snowput to manage units and start services for tenants real time. This replaces manual staff processing and delays. The launch was made possible through the hard work of staff in IT, customer and energy services, and with our vendor Vertex One, our My Snowput vendor Vertex One. Also, retail pay is now live in our service territory. This new Kruger offering allows for cash payments at retailers like Walmart, Walgreens, 7-Eleven, and more for unbanked and underbanked customers. Customers visit the Kubra Easy Pay site, select pay with cash, and receive a reusable barcode via text or email. So that's
cash.
I think it's cash or cash-like. That's what that barcode and process. Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
It is very cool. Also from CorpCom, schools went back in session for the 25-26 year, and our PUD teachers have started back in the classrooms as well, which is always super cool. You all attended and know that we had a great turnout at the Salton Side Channel ribbon cutting. It was also really cool to see all the folks sporting the fish hats. That was a nice touch. We estimated about 60 customers and staff and stakeholders were in attendance. So again, a fantastic turnout, and just a huge kudos to our natural resources generation and all the folks that pulled that together. Thank you to the engagement team and the Linwood Line Department for participating in the South County Preparedness Fair this past weekend and for talking to customers about outage preparation and response. And then finally, from September 8th to September 19th, employees were able to participate in the district's annual employee engagement survey, sharing feedback about Team PUD, their roles and leadership. The results will be shared with all employees across the district, and action plans will be developed to address the opportunities identified through the feedback. This year's survey participation was 72%, which was an improvement over last year, over 67%. So, and there is a little bit of competition going on between divisions as to who has the highest percentage. I'll
That's
leave it at that.
Isn't it for this type of survey?
Yeah. According to the vendor that we utilize, yeah, that's a good showing, but our goal is 100%. And there's groups that are just logistically a little more challenging, and HR and a number of the areas really tries to use creative ways to allow access for folks in those groups to be able to fill out a survey and provide feedback. So,
I think for
So the owner agent portal, does that require one of the new meters to make that work, or?
No, I don't.
Okay. And I will say.
Yeah, because the My Snowpud works regardless of meter type.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I will say that the ribbon cutting was impressive how many customers we had.
Yeah,
gentleman drive up from Edmonds that day who found it on social media. So
yeah.
We have
dog.
You did.
There's dogs everywhere because those sparrows are fine.
Oh, well,
but I didn't realize.
We had a customer with
a dog.
And was it our
team? Oh, a little dog. Was it a little dog?
Yes,
a little white dog.
Yeah, being carried. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, next is item 5, public hearing in action, 5A, disposal of surplus property for the fourth quarter of 2025. I'll call for a motion.
Yes,
that's it.
Okay. Based on the staff's recommendation that the items are no longer necessary or useful of the district, I move that those items listed on exhibits A and B of the surplus property recommendation report be declared surplus and be sold for high bid of disposal according to the policy in the fourth quarter of 2025.
Thank you. Well, now we'll meet a public hearing. We have Claudia Lazar available to answer any questions. I'll first ask if there's any comments from the public regarding the surplus property. Please raise your hand. Seeing no hands up online or in the room. Commissioners, do you have any questions or comments?
I have none. I think that we really have.
I don't know if it's a question. Item 10, the steel monopole that's located at I have no question.
Okay.
I misread the purchase. So.
Okay. I think the purchaser may be wrong. It looks like it was 1999. Is that the one you're talking about? Or are you talking about the... Oh, I see. One says 1999, but purchase year 2023. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah, there is a disagreement between those two.
Okay.
Like me to speak to that?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Well, Matthews, manager of joint use and permits. And so there is a discrepancy on that one. And I think that one, is it the ops or does it say?
The one with the discrepancy, I think, is
located in Snohomish, the number 11.
Okay, yeah. Number 11.
So this one was built by Verizon. Verizon built the facility, and when we redid their MLA, we had the option to take ownership of that monopole.
Oh.
And that's what we did then. So that was basically, we took over ownership in that year.
So it is a 1999 pole.
Yes.
That we bought in 2023.
Correct. For $1.
That is
$1.
$1. Now we're going to hope to get $11,000. Okay.
Thank you.
No, we should not.
Well, you should say original purchase price $1.
Well,
that's I'm done.
Any other questions or comments? All right. I will now close the public hearing and I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried unanimously. Next, item six, items for individual consideration. 6A, consideration of a resolution ratifying a lease agreement with BNSF Railway Company, a 2006 amendment, a 2019 amendment, and authorizing the Chief Operating and Legal Officer of Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County to execute a third amendment of said lease. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Is Nick Johnston available to answer any questions? I will first ask if there's any comments from the public regarding the resolution. Please raise your hand. Shockingly, there is no raised hand. So, any questions or comments, Commissioners?
Yeah,
we'll
brief on this on the 9th.
All right, I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Next, 6B, consideration of a resolution further authorizing the general manager or his designee to purchase unbundled renewable energy credits or environmental attributes to meet statutory and regulatory requirements and to support future customer products and services. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
We have Adam Cornelius available to answer any questions. Are there any comments from the public regarding this resolution? Please raise your hand. No hands raised. Do you have any questions or comments, Commissioners? I have none. We were thoroughly briefed on this. I will call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Next is 6C, consideration of resolution approving amendments implementing Secure 1.0 and 2.0 mandatory and optional features for the Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County R01K plan and the Public Utility District Number 1 of Snohomish County 457 Deferred Compensation Plan and Trust. I'll call for a motion.
I move approval.
Dean Apollo available to answer any questions or any comments from the public regarding the resolution. Seeing any? Do you have any questions or comments, Commissioners?
I have none.
I'll call for the vote. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Next, item 7, Commissioner Business. 7A, Commission Reports. We have a report, Commissioners.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you have any report, Commissioner?
Other than the great time we had. Osprey Park, was great. Enjoyed your introductory remarks.
It's very kind of you.
And we also did you know that our deputy clerk has pictures of you? I thought that maybe we could frame one.
With a fish hat on?
Fish hat on?
No, sir. General manager did not ever put his fish hat on.
I lost mine, and mine was even bedazzled, so.
I gave mine to our deputy clerk for the children, and actually she has some great pictures. She was showing me this morning of the kids.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a great event. It was wonderful to have salmon there.
They were the male salmon were having a fight.
Yeah.
To get to the spawning.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I grew up walking salmon streams and seeing salmon in Alaska. My dad was a salmon biologist. Thousands, tens of thousands of salmon watching them, but I've never seen one dig a red before.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting to watch the female dig a red. Yeah. Next, item 7B, our commission event calendar. Are there any changes to the event calendar on page 160 of our packet? In any?
No.
Okay. Next, item 8, our governance planning calendar. Are there any changes to the governance planning calendar? Governance planning calendar begins on page 165 of that.
Our budget hearing is on the 6th, Monday the 6th, October.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Is there any further business to come before the board today? Hearing none, it is 11:05 a.m. and our meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.